This is really the first stop for all of the satellite data used by NOAA to provide the weather and climate forecasts, including the hurricane forecast we're here to talk about today. NSOF is the starting point for the data that has led to the information-rich satellite images you see daily and the environmental information you see daily in your televisions, your computers, and in your smartphones. In fact, each day, NSOF produces and processes and distributes over 10 terabytes of environmental data from 17 different satellites, including the NOAA, polar, and geostationary satellites. And you can see in this room here the different operating centers where the controllers and the operators sit and operate the satellites 24/7, as well as the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program satellites for the Department of Defense, two of our international partner missions, including the JASON 2 and 3 altimetry missions, and we also process data from our European EUMETSAT partners for environmental weather. The data rate is expected to jump from 10 to 100 terabytes a day with the launch in the coming months of our GOES-R and JPSS satellites that will be happening in the coming months. We process and distribute satellite data to support these environmental operations, but NSOF is also the starting point for the satellite-aided search and rescue operations that serve the nation. Literally to my right here is the switchboard for the first step in satellite information on search and rescue. When we have alerts and warnings, we support the Coast Guard and the U.S. Air Force and local and regional rescue services and on a daily basis for boaters, fishermen, pilots, and hikers who are in distress. NSOF is unique in other ways. Its award-winning design reflects NOAA's dual high technology and environmental stewardship activities. The design feature in this building here features two main components, a three-story tower that houses, you see as you drive up here, the satellites for communication, for taking the data in, and as well as all the computer centers topped with and it is spanned by a green roof. It's one of the largest green roofs in the National Capital Area, and this building was actually the first federal building in the area which has achieved a LEED Silver design for environmental compliance. And now, it is my privilege to introduce the lineup of speakers for today's 2016 NOAA Atlantic Hurricane Outlook press briefing. You'll hear first from Laura Frugione, Deputy Director of NOAA's National Weather Service. After Laura, Dr. Catherine Sullivan, the NOAA Administrator, will give the hurricane season outlook. And finally, you'll hear from Joe Nimick, who is FEMA's Deputy Administrator. After the press briefing today, I encourage you to go to the conference room upstairs on the second floor or downstairs on the second floor to see a fifth-scale replica of the GOES-R satellite, our next-generation observing system, planned to launch late this year, Cape Canaveral, Florida. This is an historic mission, adding revolutionary new observing techniques and capabilities that will significantly improve NOAA's environmental information and weather forecast capabilities. You'll be able to talk at that time to NOAA experts on both the satellite and the development side of the house, as well as representatives from Lockheed Martin and Harris Corporation, major developers of both the satellite and the ground systems of the GOES-R system. And again, welcome everyone. And with that, I'll turn the floor over to Laura Frugione, the Deputy Administrator for NOAA's National Weather Service.
Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. I do need to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
Good morning, and thank you, Dr. Volz. I'm Laura Frugione, the Deputy Director for the National Weather Service and NOAA's Deputy Assistant Administrator for Weather Services. The purpose of this 2016 Atlantic Hurricane Outlook is to really get people prepared for the coming hurricane season, and not just focus on the numbers, but know that it only takes one, so be prepared if that one does impact you and your family. I would like to also remind people that it's not necessarily about where that eye of the hurricane makes landfall or the winds around that hurricane, because as we've seen more times, it's the flooding that is the greatest impact. 9 out of 10 fatalities associated with hurricanes are water-related. It's that inland flooding and coastal storm surge that are more costly and more dangerous, so be prepared for that. Let's not forget the rip currents as well. As we go into this Memorial Day weekend and we have some potential threats, we also have the threat for rip currents. So know how to prepare yourself and be ready for the impacts of rip currents. Also, severe weather associated with hurricanes and lightning and tornadoes. So be prepared for all the potential impacts associated with this hurricane season. It's shaping up to be a banner year for NOAA and the National Weather Service. We're building a weather-ready nation by investing your National Weather Service to evolve the agency to meet modern and future needs for America. The Weather Ready Nation initiative turns 5 this year. We've come a long way to build a foundation to make communities more resilient. We've matured the science, created new products, and improved our communications of threats. This continued investment will make tangible improvements to hurricane track and intensity forecasts this year to improve our community resiliency to landfalling hurricanes, storm surge, inland flooding, and even sea level rise. Our Hurricane Forecast Improvement Program also is 5 years old this year. We continue this multi-year effort to improve hurricane forecasts, and some of the improvements that I've already mentioned, we are on track to meet the 5-year goal of improving our track and intensity forecasts by 20%. We began 2016 by also announcing a major upgrade to our operational supercomputing. Our powerful supercomputers, both the operational and the backup, can collectively process 5.6 quadrillion calculations per second. We can now process more observations than ever before. This supercomputer upgrade is allowing for a number of weather and climate forecast model innovations and improvements, which will enhance the hurricane forecasting this year. Our global forecast system, otherwise known as the GFS, that upgrade happened earlier this month. GFS is foundational to all of our weather and climate models, so the recent upgrade will help improve hurricane forecasts this year and many other forecasts as well. The model now gives hourly forecast guidance 5 days out and takes timing into account when simulating how, when, and where storms will develop and move. Our hurricane weather research and forecasting model also had some recent enhancements and made it our best performing intensity model over the period of 2013 to 2015. We'll mark the first time forecasters have had direct connections between the coupled air, ocean, and waves, which will again improve our forecasting for the track and intensity. This upgrade will also increase the number of storms that we can forecast for any given time to 8. Hopefully, we won't be able to test that this year. And speaking of water again, we have an exciting new flood forecasting tool coming online this summer to help us forecast inland flooding. As I mentioned before, inland flooding is the greatest threat to life and property from a landfalling tropical system. This is the 5-year anniversary of Tropical Storm Irene that passed over New York City and caused tremendous historic flooding in the state of Vermont. We remember the devastation that that storm caused, and now, with our new National Water Model, version 1, that's coming out this summer, we'll be able to produce 7-day weather forecasts, water forecasts, and a 30-day water outlook for the entire nation, which we've never been able to do before. This will use data from every stream reach in the United States and provide hourly water forecasts for 700 times more places than we've been able to do it in the past. This will allow us to greatly enhance our ability to forecast inland flooding from tropical storms and hurricanes. Currently, we forecast for 4,000 points, but with the National Water Model, we'll be able to have neighborhood resolution at 2.67 million points. That's really amazing. We also have some advancements at the National Hurricane Center this year. We have new tools to help communicate the threats of the storm surge and the potential for hurricane activity. For the second year, the National Hurricane Center will have an experimental storm surge watch warning graphic. This will highlight coastal areas most at risk for life-threatening inundation by storm surge from a tropical cyclone. It's designed to introduce this watch warning specific concept for storm surge hazard, which we've never had before. Also, our experimental product, the potential storm surge flood map that was debuted in 2014, will go operational this year in 2016. So the map highlights geographic areas where inundation from a storm could occur and the height above ground that the water could reach, representing a worst-case scenario for any individual location. That's exciting that you can actually see in a graphic where the highest level of water could occur. In conclusion, resilience to hurricanes can only be accomplished if the public, if you, use this outlook today to help you become better prepared for hurricane season and heed specific warnings and local orders from our emergency managers. Last week, I celebrated the Hurricane Preparedness Week by joining the Air Force and NOAA Hurricane Hunters on their Gulf of Mexico Hurricane Awareness Tour. President Obama also issued a proclamation that spoke of our improvements in technology, forecasting and models, and new ways of disseminating this information to the public. He urged all Americans to get ready for the hurricane season by having a plan ready about how to respond to warnings. He stated in the proclamation, quote, "Our communities are not resilient unless individuals have proper precautions." As Rick Nabb, the Hurricane Center Director, and Leslie Chapman Henderson, the CEO for the Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, said, quote, "We can't let hurricanes push us around. We all have to be hurricane strong." That's a hashtag, hurricane strong, and you can even do the symbol, hurricane strong. I now invite Dr. Sullivan to the podium to deliver this year's 2016 Atlantic hurricane season outlook. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Laura. Let me extend a special thank you also to Dr. Steve Voltz for hosting us here at this really very pretty and quite spectacular facility. And I do encourage you to take him up on his offer to go upstairs and take a tour of the Gozar replica when we're done here with this event. I'd also like to acknowledge Dr. Jerry Bell, who leads the NOAA team that produces the annual Atlantic Hurricane Season Outlook. He'll be available for your questions after the conference portion of this event is through. As we've been hearing already, communities all along America's coastlines are actually in the throes of preparing for hurricane season. And although that season doesn't officially begin until June 1, I do want to start today with an update on the low-pressure system that's currently being monitored between Bermuda and the Bahamas that has a prospect of approaching the southeast U.S. coastline. Its technical name is INVEST-91-LIMA, or L. According to NOAA forecasters, this system has quite a high chance of becoming a tropical or a subtropical cyclone, in which case it would pick up the next name in the season list, and that would be Bonnie. Storms in May are not unusual. We had two back in 2012. This one may or may not reach the threshold to become tropical, but that prospect is now quite high. No watches or warnings have yet been issued on this storm, but we are launching Hurricane Hunter aircraft this afternoon to investigate the area and take detailed measurements to improve our outlook on that. In any event, everybody along the southeast coast from Georgia through the Carolinas should watch the progress of this system very closely. And as I'm sure our colleague Joe Nimick will say, now is the time that you want to also be thinking about your weekend plans, your go kit, how you're going to keep your family together, and whether, in fact, you should maybe modify your weekend plans to take account of the prospect of severe weather along the eastern coast. This developing system underscores the importance of annual routines in getting homes and businesses ready, in reviewing family plans, in assembling emergency supplies, do a go kit. These kind of realities are and need to be a way of life in coastal America. And at NOAA, we've done our preparations as well. You heard from Laura how our supercomputers are more powerful than ever, with greater capability to take in and process the billions of Earth observations that we need to make daily forecasts for you all. Faster supercomputers will continue to pave the way for us to add more capabilities to our forecast models in the future. And as she said, based on these unprecedented improvements, made possible, by the way, through the generosity of the Congress, who provided supplemental funding in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, I can tell you very confidently that NOAA's National Hurricane Center is poised to deliver a forecast this season that will be more accurate and more reliable than ever before. But the forecast models and the supercomputers that power them are meaningless if they don't have quality data. And we get these data by observing the planet with robust observational networks. Our ability to accurately observe, measure, and monitor the oceans and the atmosphere is what is the foundation of our ability to forecast and warn the public of threats from hurricanes and other weather phenomena. Up to 90% of the data that go into a modern-day weather forecast, in fact, are derived from satellites. As you've heard, NOAA will launch this fall a new satellite designated GOES-R into geostationary orbit. GOES-R will provide vivid images of severe weather every 30 seconds. It will scan the Earth five times faster than our current satellites can do. It will provide four times greater image resolution and use triple the number of wavelength channels that we have today. All these data from GOES-R will further improve NOAA's hurricane tracking and intensity forecasts by helping us to pinpoint a system's intensity and exact location, as well as helping us monitor more closely for signs of weakening or intensifying. Our improved track and intensity forecasts will, in turn, give FEMA and local emergency managers better information and more timely information to guide them as they pre-position resources or determine who should evacuate, and just as importantly, as they determine who can safely not evacuate and let the storm pass by. GOES-R will provide many more benefits across all of NOAA's forecast mission areas, though. It will also provide increased warning times on thunderstorm and tornadoes. It'll provide better tracking of smoke and dust plumes. It will help us improve aviation flight routing. It'll provide data for long-term climate variability studies, improve our ability to monitor space weather and support warnings of solar storm effects. It will contribute to maritime forecasts, long-range seasonal predictions, and drought outlooks. And very interestingly, and we're very excited about this development, it gives us direct ability to monitor lightning activity over land and water. GOES-R truly does represent a major step forward in NOAA's satellite programs. It will enable us to improve how we view the world and also how we make decisions about public safety, resource use, and economic opportunities. So again, let me add my encouragement to take the tour. So on to the business directly at hand. I have the privilege of presenting the 2016 Atlantic hurricane season outlook. NOAA's outlook for this season indicates that it is most likely to be a near normal year. In the Atlantic, the season will likely produce a range of from 10 to 16 tropical storms. Those are systems with top sustained winds of at least 39 miles an hour. 4 to 8 of those are expected to become hurricanes, with top wind speeds sustained at 74 miles an hour or greater. And between 1 and 4 of those hurricanes are expected to grow to major strength of Category 3 or higher, which translates to wind speeds of at least 111 miles an hour. Near normal may sound sort of encouraging, relaxed, things are okay, but I want to emphasize that the predicted level of activity that I just read off compared to the past 3 years that we've experienced actually suggest we could be in for more activity than we've seen in recent years. And again, I want to emphasize, as we do each year, this is a forecast about the number of systems, storms, and hurricanes likely to form. It makes no prediction of makes no prediction with respect to landfalls or tracks at this point, just the amount of activity likely to be expected during this season. As always is the case, our hurricane season outlook is based on predictions of climate factors that are known to influence the formation, development, and propagation of hurricanes, along with model predictions of atmospheric and oceanic conditions. This year, there is strong variability in several key climate factors, greater than in past years, and so there is uncertainty as to whether these factors will be reinforcing each other or competing with respect to tropical storm formation. More specifically, there's uncertainty about whether the high activity era of Atlantic hurricanes has ended. This high activity phase began in 1995. It's associated with an ocean temperature pattern that is called the warm phase of the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation, or AMO. A warm phase of the AMO leads to warmer Atlantic Ocean temperatures and a stronger West African monsoon, and these contribute to the formation of hurricanes. However, during the past 3 years, weaker hurricane seasons have been accompanied by a shift towards the cool signature of the AMO, cooler Atlantic Ocean temperatures and a weaker West African monsoon. If this shift proves to be more than short-lived if it's not just a temporary blip, then it could be signaling the arrival of a low activity era for Atlantic hurricanes. Possibly that's already begun. Possibly we're just in a transient. High and low phases tend to run 25 to 40 years. So recent indications of maybe a cooling and a move toward cool phase of the AMO, but not yet long enough duration to state assuredly that we're shifting phase on the AMO. The second uncertainty factor this year is about the extent to which El Nino and La Nina will influence the Atlantic hurricane seasons. Yes, the El Nino is dissipating, but the tail of its impacts could extend into the early part of the hurricane season. NOAA's Climate Prediction Center is forecasting a 70% chance of La Nina developing on the heels of that, and La Nina then to be present during the peak months of hurricane season, which are August to October. In the Atlantic, La Nina favors more hurricane activity, but model predictions show uncertainty as to how strong the La Nina impacts will be. So the prospect of moving towards a cooler AMO, which is not yet definitive, and uncertainty as to who will win out in which months of the hurricane season, El Nino influences or La Nina influences. In sum, although the outlook is predicting a near normal season, I again want to underscore this leaves in place still the potential for considerable activity. And a near normal season does not mean we're off the hook or that there won't be hurricane-related impacts. It only takes one storm anywhere, however intense the season is, to be really devastating to homes, families, and communities. So now is the time for you to start preparing for the upcoming season, which starts in just a few days. Every effort we make in our forecasting and predictive abilities fits within NOAA's goal of making sure that we're providing the products and services that enable our partners as well as the citizens we serve to make active decisions that are needed to bolster their resilience in the face of weather-related challenges. We are closer to realizing our goals than ever before, thanks to the hard work of NOAA employees and our many key collaborators and the support of the Congress. But all of these preparations still leave us exposed to Mother Nature and still leave us with the imperative of always being prepared. And so on that note, I'd now like to invite FEMA Deputy Director Joe Nimick to the podium to talk about this imperative. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Sullivan. And thank you for the phenomenal work that your staff at NOAA and the National Weather Service has done in order to give us better knowledge in terms of the likelihood. But as each and every storm, as you look at Invest 91L, realizing we already have an understanding of the likely impacts it will have and where it will come ashore, you've done your job. You've done your role in trying to give us better information, the National Hurricane Center's ability to project out longer, to more accurately define landfall and the impacts of landfall, including the surge model that lets us now see exactly how much water pushed from the ocean will impact our homes, our industries, and our locations, as well as the National Water Center that now looks at that riverine flooding that you've heard has an impact and more deaths and more damage done from riverine flooding often than from the shore-based surge models. You've done your part, Dr. Sullivan. It's now important for us to do our part. None of this information is worthwhile unless we understand it, we access it, and then we respond to it. So the critical factor here is what do we as citizens take advantage of all of the information that is now provided to us? Have we planned ahead? The single biggest factor for you is to understand where you're located and what your evacuation plan is, and when you're told to evacuate, evacuate. I can't tell you how many times we have had a disaster where we go to support an individual who's been impacted and said, I've lived here for 30 years and my house has never flooded, even though we've told you it's in the floodplain and we've told you that the potential exists. Every time you don't evacuate, you put first responders' lives at danger. The key factor when you are told that there's an event that will impact you or your home is to listen and to take the appropriate evacuation capability. Addition to evacuation, as Dr. Sullivan said, you may not be in the area that is immediately impacted, but will have secondary impacts in terms of power outages, lack of utilities, lack of other infrastructure, and you need to be prepared. You need to have the resources to survive and to take care of yourself in terms of water and food for the duration that you're exposed, at least 48 hours. We continue to look at being able to stay informed. There's multiple different weathers and apps that are down there. I ask every civilian, every individual, every citizen to download the FEMA app. Downloading the FEMA app to your mobile device allows you, this free offer, to understand the tips and safety before, during, and after an emergency. The FEMA app will allow you to have information not only before, but during, and then critically after an emergency occurs. The app allows you to set your preparedness reminders that if you get a notification that you can update your emergency kits and practice your escape plans, your evacuation plans. You can sign up for emergency alerts and evacuation orders from your local emergency management offices. It is a simple thing to do to ensure you're prepared. Finally, the single biggest thing we see is the impact to people's lives after the event. If you're in a flood zone, flood insurance is your best recourse. The additional support that you may get if you don't have flood insurance will never cover the losses that you have incurred. Much like wind, much like fire, if you are in an area that is likely to have flood, not having flood insurance means you are not prepared to restore your life to some semblance of normalcy. Clearly, FEMA works very closely, hand in hand, day to day, with our friends at NOAA and the National Weather Service. There is nothing more that impacts my day than the morning brief in terms of what the weather will do. Whether it's flooding today in Texas or tornadoes tonight in Kansas or the Invest 91L that will impact northern Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina this weekend, be aware, utilize the improvements that the National Weather Service has made for us to do the right thing and be prepared to respond to that information. Thank you, and I think we'll go to questions.
Thank you, and now we'll go to the Q&A. First, we'll take questions from in the room, and then we'll go to the phone with the operator-assisted question-answer session. I'd like to invite Dr. Sullivan and Dr. Bell to the podium to answer the questions. And if you will please state your name and affiliation before you begin your question, we'd appreciate it. And if you have a person you're directing the question to, that would also be helpful. Are there any questions in the room? Okay, operator, we'll go to the questions on the phone. Can you facilitate, please?
At this time, I'd like to begin the formal question and answer. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then 1, and record your first and last name. If you'd like to withdraw your question, you may press star, then 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star, then 1, and record your first and last name. One moment for the first question, please. First question comes from Nell Greenfield Voice. You may ask your question.
Yeah, hi. This question is for Catherine Sullivan. Thanks for doing this briefing. When you say it's a near normal season, could you just characterize a little bit why it's not a normal season? I mean, what aspect of it is not quite normal?
Thanks for that question. I'm going to invite Jerry Bell to give you an explanation. It basically, you're talking about a range of probabilities, and as we indicated, there's some potentially competing or potentially reinforcing factors which make this year a little more uncertain than others. But, Jerry, you want to amplify on that?
Sure. Dr. Jerry Bell, NOAA's lead seasonal hurricane forecaster. We have three season classifications, above normal, near normal, and below normal. Near normal refers to a range of activity defined by the overall season strength as well as the numbers of hurricanes, major hurricanes, and tropical storms. We use near normal instead of normal because normal people think oftentimes of as the mathematical average. And we're not talking about the mathematical average here. We're just talking the middle of the middle third of the seasons with a certain level of activity.
So just to clarify, so that it's not like, you know, it's just sort of in the middle range of seasons.
Yes. Each one of the season designations is a range of prospects. It's not a distinct number. So it's either the lower range, the near normal range, or the higher range.
So it's kind of a middle of the road season, although there are uncertainties, like you said.
Yes.
Thank you.
Next question comes from David Flesher. You may ask your question.
Yes. If somebody could address, talk a little bit more about the signals that we might be entering a low activity era, what you'll be watching in the future, how many months or years it'll take for you to say definitively that that's happened, and what that could mean in terms of storm numbers. And
well, those are real good questions, and it's hard to say. When we're looking at these ocean temperature patterns, we're not looking at month-to-month or year-to-year changes. We're looking at patterns that last for multiple decades at a time. That's why this is called a multi-decadal oscillation. But we don't just have the pattern lasting in exactly the same strength for decades at a time. There's some variability. And so while we're seeing the warm phase of the AMO possibly switching to the cold phase, this couple of year transition that we're seeing may just reflect the normal year-to-year signals and not really a multi-decadal pattern. So what we'll be looking for to see if this actually is a multi-decadal shift is the duration of the pattern and also its duration through the year. Right now we're seeing the cold AMO signal more in the winter and in the cool season and not really very much in the summer and into the hurricane season. So we would expect this pattern to develop more through the year or the next couple of years. It may take a few years before we really know if we're in the cold phase of the AMO or not. It's hard to say at this point. The last time we had a transition to the cold AMO was in the early 1970s, and we just didn't have the data, the ocean data, the model data, the satellite data. We didn't have any of the capabilities hardly that we have now to really monitor this. So we're really looking at this kind of from a new slant to try and predict this change the earliest we can, but we don't want to predict and say it's a multi-decadal switch if it's only a short-term signal.
This is Kathy Sullivan. I'm going to offer a short, small, friendly amendment to Jerry's comment. We're not looking at this. This is the first time we've watched a potential transition between phases with sophisticated scientific instruments at all, so it's not about a new slant. We're actually watching it for the first time and with very new eyes. If we knew what three or four earlier ones had looked like, we'd have some basis for saying they commonly take X amount of time to prove themselves out, but it's a first time that we're seeing signals that might portend a phase shift, and so we're watching carefully with all the alertness that Jerry indicated. Are there other questions on the phone?
Next question comes from Willie Dreyer. You may ask your question.
Yes, thank you very much. I was just wondering if you could comment on the factors that have prevented a major hurricane landfall since, I guess it was 2005, and whether any of those factors are still in place or whether there's any way of knowing whether the likelihood of this unusual string of no landfalling major hurricanes being broken.
Well, we've been extremely fortunate that we haven't had major hurricane landfalls in the number of years you've said, but that you can have tremendous damage even if the storm is not a major status. For instance, Irene and also Sandy, those were not major hurricanes, but they caused tremendous damage and flooding. So there's a lot more to the impacts of a hurricane than just its strength. There's its size, its motion, it's your location with respect to the eye wall, it's the inland flooding, tornadoes, your preparedness so that you're ready for the damage and can act accordingly. So to just get off the major hurricane thing, because there's many more important issues. Now, there is a set of weather patterns that tends to favor more hurricane landfalls. And I guess the heart of that weather pattern is if you have a higher pressure over the eastern U.S., What that tends to do is take the hurricanes from the tropical Atlantic more westward toward the Caribbean, and then those storms can either move up through the Gulf of Mexico and strike or kind of swerve up through the Bahamas and strike. So with that high pressure pattern, for instance, we saw in 2003, 4, and 5, when we had a lot of hurricanes striking, that was the main pattern. Now, fortunately, in the last several years, we've had low pressure over the eastern United States. What that does is it causes a stronger southwesterly flow, and that recurves these hurricanes out into the open Atlantic, oftentimes, you know, far before they're threatening the coast. So we've been very fortunate with that pattern, but there's no way it's to predict that it's going to be in place for the bulk of this hurricane season. And even if that pattern is in place, all it takes is a break of a couple of weeks, and you can have a huge hurricane or tremendous hurricane damage. So, but the outlook is not for hurricane landfalls, and it's because we just simply cannot predict these local weather patterns. They're only predictable about a week in advance and at the time the hurricane is approaching. So we just cannot predict where or how many storms will strike this far in advance because those hurricanes are really, and tracks are controlled by the local weather patterns.
Thanks very much. I think I understand the limitations that you have. My question was just whether any of the prevailing patterns from previous years are in place this year. But I understand that you can't say with certainty whether you're going to have a major hurricane come ashore. But like I said, I was just wondering about the prevailing patterns that might have had some influence in the past 11 years.
This is Kathy Sullivan. The prevailing patterns, the ones that are that endure long enough and have some predictability at seasonal scales, are the ones we talked about in the outlook, and they do let us give an outlook for level of activity. But when you refer to the prevailing patterns that have affected storm track and landfall, as Jerry said, those don't prevail over long times. Those are in days and weeks, and we can only predict them that far out. So we don't know what the prevailing patterns will be come June, July, August through October. Our predictions tell you expect a fair number of storms likely to form, and then you're going to have to just be ready and watch the weather patterns at the time that a storm is coming in.
Thanks very much.
Next question comes from Laura Martinez. You may ask your question.
Hi, yes, thank you, Dr. Sullivan. I'm curious because I know you mentioned that it looks like El Nino is going to start maybe phasing out, and that possibly there's a 70% chance that La Nina will develop and possibly increase the amount of hurricanes or the activity. Can you expand on that a little bit more? Since I live in Texas, on the Gulf Coast, and we've been hit by hurricanes before. So what are the chances of La Nina actually developing before the end of the season?
This is Jerry Bell. Right now, the Climate Prediction Center is indicating a 70% chance that La Nina will be here during the peak months of the hurricane season, which is August, September, and October. And that's when, by far, the bulk of the hurricanes and major hurricanes form. About 90% to 95% of the storms occur during August, September, and October. And there's a high likelihood La Nina will be present and trying to strengthen the season during those normally active months. But the counter to that is we don't know if we're in this background climate signal that would further enhance the activity or perhaps a change in that signal that might help to suppress La Nina's impacts. And that's why we're expecting a near normal season at this time. But that's still, as Kathy mentioned, that's still a lot of activity. So you need to start getting prepared now with your hurricane preparedness plans, because we know it only takes one, and the sooner you prepare, obviously the more ready you will be in case a storm threatens.
Oh, do you know the last time that we've seen a La Nina present during the hurricane season, Atlantic hurricane season? Because I know that we've had El Nino for a while, and we haven't had anything really down here. So when's the last time that we actually saw La Nina have an impact? When's the last time we've actually seen La Nina have an impact on the season?
Yes, La Nina was last here in 2010, and the combination of La Nina and the warm AMO produced a very active 2010 hurricane season.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Barbara Hollingsworth. You may ask your question.
If the AMO is headed in the direction that you think it is, what will be the overall result on hurricanes over the next, say, two decades?
Well, at this time, we don't know if the AMO is switching to its cold phase. If and when the AMO does switch back to its cold phase, that is associated with a weaker West African monsoon and also weaker hurricane seasons. The last time we had a cold phase of the AMO was during 1971 to 1994. That was called a low activity era for Atlantic hurricanes. And during that 25-year period, we only had two above normal seasons, and half were below normal. So that's how strong this AMO signal is. It really is a powerhouse as far as controlling the strength of the hurricane season for decades at a time.
Next question comes from David Flesher. You may ask your question.
Yes, to follow up on the question of the AMO, if we did enter an era, a lower intensity era, what would that mean specifically in terms of storm numbers and intensity?
This is Jerry again. Low activity era would mean fewer storms, fewer hurricanes, and fewer major hurricanes.
Can you quantify that at all? I mean, is there a range?
Well, that's getting too speculative. We've been averaging for this high activity era about 15 named storms a year, about 8 hurricanes, and about 4 major hurricanes. In the low activity era, we might average, say, you know, two major hurricanes, 1 to 2 major hurricanes, 4 to 5 hurricanes. That's the type of numbers we saw back in the 1971 to 1994 period. But that's just a very general idea of what these differences in numbers mean.
This is Kathy Sullivan. If I could just amplify, statistically, the number of storms in this season may be lower in that kind of period. But 1992, I would remind you, was also Hurricane Andrew. And to Joe Nimick's point, that was a very low year. I think that was about the only storm that formed. And it absolutely devastated a very wide swath of South Florida. That place took decades to really begin to come back. So don't bank your course of action based on whether you're feeling low, medium, or high. Hurricanes happen annually. Whether it's a low, medium, or high season, one can hit the coast or brush the coast near you. And in any event, living where we live on this hemisphere and this planet, this is the season to be sure you're ready for hurricanes, not banking on statistical odds.
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Thank you, operator. I think we have one in the room.
Doyle Weiss, USA Today. The question is, what is considered now a normal season as far as what do the actual numbers go for a normal season, both in the Atlantic and in the Eastern Pacific? What numbers do you use?
Well, the averages for the Atlantic are seasonal average is 12 named storms, 6 hurricanes, and 2 to 3 major hurricanes. But those averages reflect are kind of a boundary between, or kind of the middle ground between these high activity eras with a lot of activity and low activity eras with quite a bit less activity. So I'm not sure if I answered that question. The Eastern Pacific is overall a more active basin. It averages 15 to 16 named storms, 8 hurricanes, and about 5 major hurricanes. Now, while the Atlantic has been very active since 1995, the way these climate signals work is that they have a seesaw effect. So the Central and Eastern Pacific hurricanes and seasons have been below normal since 1995. And during the last couple of years with these changing this coolness in the AMO, the Atlantic has gone suppressed, while the Central and Eastern Pacific have really gotten enhanced. So these climate factors have a seesaw effect, and we're actually seeing a little bit of that right now.
Further questions in the room?
Hi, my name is Sarah. Thank you, ma'am and sir. I have a question. Like, when I'm watching the news, the local news, and hurricanes coming, and they're predicting a green path and a red path and a blue path and a yellow path, and there are those all paths coming from your guys' number crunching from this center, or are we getting numbers from other people's algorithms that are using the same numbers?
In general, with every significant weather system, the modern-day technique is to use an ensemble of forecasts, different models produced by different entities. Each model's got its strengths and weaknesses, its error factors in it. If with all those variations in the models and the data, the results of a forecast 48 or 50 hours out converge, then that tells you that kind of outcome, that situation is robust against all those different errors. It gives you some greater confidence that that's a more likely outcome. So it depends on what your TV guy is showing you. Sometimes in hurricane season, they'll show you different colored paths, and those are historical past tracks to remind you where hurricanes have gone in the past. Sometimes they're showing you the different output of different models, several of which are NOAA's, some of which are from Europe. Again, whether you're in Europe or the United States or Canada or Japan, really competent forecasters these days are using all of those models. And their forecast is not a popularity contest or flip a coin or pick one. It's actually a scientific judgment about the strengths and weaknesses of each of them that lead them to give you their forecast guidance.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. If you have follow-up questions, you can email us at nws.pa@noaa.gov or find us in the room. And with that, I'd like to conclude the press conference. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. You may disconnect at this time.